conference happened, and so I haven't gotten into trying to, like, work on the editing. So I want to get a couple more recorded before I start posting them.
Yeah.
I'm recording now, so I should welcome people to the show. I might not even edit this part out, because this is, like, the entire point of the show was always, this is the show. The after conference, after party. So, hello and welcome back to Vox Popcast, the weekly pseudo academic roundtable of pop culture analysis with drinking and swearing. My name is Christopher Maverick, but you can call me Mav. And I am here today with the people who are sort of responsible for this show existing. We were talking off air. Now, Wayne's not here. None of the regulars are here today because I'm the only one who's able to make it to PCA. But the reason this show exists in a large part is because we like conferences so much. And like Wayne and Katya and I, 5 years ago, I guess, however long the show's been going, we were like, wouldn't it be great if we could do this every week? And then we thought about, we had a whole idea for we'd do conference. We just every week there'd be a topic and we'd research it. And it's like, but that sounds hard because like we'd have to find, like, I mean, it's not that this show is easy. It's just that like we, to actually do a full panel presentation, like we'd have to each write like a 7-page paper. That's a lot of work when you have a job and stuff. And it's like, or the best part of conferences is hanging out and drinking with your friends after the panels, when you're just like, oh yeah, that was really good. So then Vox Pop became, what if we could just do the after party of PCA every week of the year? And that's kind of how we've approached the show. That's where the drinking and swearing part came from. Because, like, you know, you two don't drink. It doesn't matter. It's like, it was literally just
we don't swear.
But it was like literally trying to get like the concept of just us all hanging out after and like doing the decompress. So this is that day. So hi, I'm Mav, and I'm here with...
I'm Joe Dorowski.
John Dorowski.
Matthew Brake.
Nicole Fry.
And they've all been on the show before, so you could just like literally find other episodes.
So don't make him explain it.
Well, no. Well, Joe was on like 2 weeks ago.
At the time of recording, yeah.
because... And that was because you asked me to do your show.
We were like, and you're just like, no crossover. And I'm like, yeah, go ahead, post it.
With 1 day's notice, sure. So, and that's, but I mean, that's the entire point. So, how's it going, guys?
Good. It's, let's see, where there's 1 day left of the conference.
Yeah, not technically an after show. We've got one.
But we've all presented our panels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's when, as far as I'm concerned, the conference is over.
Yeah. I was so busy today.
Conference is over for you and for everyone else once my panel is done.
Yeah.
I do love that. I don't know. I know, Joe, this applies to you. Mav, it applies to you. John, Nicole, I don't know if it applies to you, but like the start of the conference for us also included writing the papers for the conference.
My paper was written.
Because you're writing it for a book, Johnson.
I can verify that I had his paper written.
Yes,
I have seen it.
Now the hard part, though, was my paper was written, but it was about 5,000 words too long to do. So there was massive editing that had to happen. So there was a lot of me that first night was, okay, I need to chop 7,000 words down to like 2,000. Okay, this is going to be an adventure. And I should have done it in the last week. But I did. So I did all that the last night. And then I got up at like 7 a.m. It's like, now to make a slideshow.
Now, my paper is part of the same project that Mav's paper is for John. So you would think I would have also had my paper done. But no. I had an extension from John, and I had to get something ready to present at this conference.
That is one of the privileges of having a sibling as the editor. Yes. And that nepotism card you can play.
Yes.
I should explain, is the entire panel was Mav, Joseph, myself, John, and Nicole, all part of a project on adapting the X-Men that hopefully by next PCA is out.
Fingers crossed
on that. It will be next year, mm-hmm. hopefully by next PCA,
mm-hmm.
as a book form. And so this panel was the adapting the X-Men panel. We actually had two other papers that are going to be in the book that were the very first panel of the mm-hmm. comics art area.
Mm.
And I'm very excited about this project because it's pushing these ideas of what adaptation is. And it's the right moment. I went around the book room and every press seemed to have some book on adaptation and superheroes now,
mm-hmm.
but they're all about superheroes in film. And mm-hmm. this is Yes, there are essays on film, but there's going to be essays on television, role-playing games, trading cards, poetry, novels. So pushing the idea of what we consider as superheroes. And
we do have, you did pick ones for film. I wasn't even sure.
There are going to be a couple on film.
Celebrating the later X-Men films, I presume.
I'm trying to remember if we got one on video games.
Do you have one on the New Mutants film?
No, New Mutants did not come up.
See, because that I would have considered. I mean, I really want. I had an idea for The Gifted. A lot of times when we do these projects, like when we do the show, our show, Vox Pop, or when we do conferences, like I will often, you always call it like the Korvac Prize, right? Like I will pick the worst things ever intentionally. So like Joe, like two or three books ago, you had the Black Panther book. You were like, I'm doing this. And I'm like, Dibs on the Brown Leopard episode, which is a comic that no one likes. And I was like, no, I'm going to write about it. I'm going to take it completely serious. One of the best things I've ever written. I very much enjoyed that essay. But it was like, I knew no one else.
That was the couch, everyone.
Yeah.
That was the couch.
But I knew no one else was going to take it. I was just like, no one's going to want this. And then I've done the Iron Fist thing that I did at PCA one year. I did this thing where I'm like, no one's going to want this. But when you're like, when you want to do the X-Men, I was just like, no, I've got a take on Gifted. I actually have something like in mind that I think is legitimately good without me forcing it to be good. So, this was fun. I had a lot to say.
I wanted you to know, I did not accept your proposal just because you're a friend. That is a good proposal.
Thank you.
Here's the validation. It was a good proposal. That's why I accepted it.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I was like, but it was weird because usually it is like, it is really me going, like, I like to work with. I've said on the show before, I love the movie Sucker Punch. I like to work with things that I know are bad and like find what's the value in it. Gifted is not bad. It's not a bad show. It's mediocre. I think like, people were asking me even today, like, you know, later, it's like, so should I watch the show or not? And it's like, yes, but understand that it's a superhero show that would have been the best show on the air in the 90s, but it came out in 2017. It very much, I mean, it has the look of, you know, if it wants to compete with Smallville, but Smallville had been off the air for over a decade. And that's what it is. And it was like up against Daredevil and, you know, and it doesn't, and it has, there's no budget. Like everyone's power is super strength or vague telekinesis where they don't actually need CGI. It can just be people waving their hands around and then a stagehand will knock something over from off screen. And you can tell, like, the guy, they'd be like, I'm going to psychically push that trash can into that window. And the guy waves his hands and then someone throws a trash can through a window and you're like,
you see the stagehands like, hand.
but it's fine.
So speaking of bad adaptations, do you have an essay in this book on the 1990s Generation X made for TV movie?
No, that was on my list of
things I wanted. It, but yeah,
part of the project is also I created an appendix trying to track as many adaptations that I can. And I know I'm not getting everything, nor really everything that should be considered an adaptation. I can't list every action figure. Mm-hmm. I probably won't be able to list every trading card set. Mm-hmm. I am aware, and I have a running list of everything that's announced. Like, it's not just what was produced. I want what was produced. What did they cameo in? Mm. And then what was
announced but never happened?
Yeah. Like,
oh, wow.
Happened. So there is a script for a Beast movie.
Oh, really?
Fear of the Beast. And it is out on the internet now. There was the Magneto film, that origin film that was announced.
Oh.
And so, like, things like the Dazzler, all the Dazzler projects.
The dream was alive. To revive disco.
I try and track everything.
I mean, the Dazzler is just a funny thing because they were trying to capture the disco zeitgeist and they didn't get the comic book out until 1980. And they were still trying to do film and albums that were trying to capture disco by the mid-80s. They were still like, we can make this happen.
Have you read Dazzler the movie, the graphic novel?
No, I have not.
I mean, so this dream's alive till like 86.
It's alive for someone, but for not whoever for all.
Graphic novel.
Yeah.
Have you read it?
No.
It's. I mean, so I know our friend Anna Papart. Anna's read it. I've read it.
Of course, Anna's read it.
It's. I mean, it's better than you probably think it is. And it really is. In the context,
that bar was very low.
But in the context of somebody trying to take the concept of Dazzler seriously and do a thought-provoking graphic novel that takes a sex-positive musician's, not even, it's barely a superhero story, like much of early Dazzler. She's not interested in superheroes. She's interested in being a rock star and an actress in this. And it tries to tell this compelling story in the context of this still has to, like, fit in the X-Men universe later, right? Like, it's got, like, we've got to, we can't, you know, they can't go too far. This can't be a Vertigo title, right? Like, if it were DC, it's gotta fit within this world, because she had an ongoing comic book at the time. So this graphic novel takes place over like a 6-month period where she's filming the movie, and it just slots in between two issues of Dazzler. And it's swing. It's something.
Better or worse, do you think, than Howard the Duck?
The movie?
Yeah.
Oh, it's far better than Howard the Duck. it's far better. I mean, it's
okay.
It's, yeah. My whole question: better or worse than the Generation X TV?
Well, that was going to bring me to my question: how many of you watched that when it aired?
I watched it,
and for sure, four hands go up.
Shout out! I have not seen it. I admit.
Shout out to my little sister. She is a huge fan. Now, my little sister is 13 years younger than I am. So I was born in 1974. The Generation X movie came out in 1994?
93?
97.
97? Oh, that
one.
No, you're
right. To the Wikipedia, Batman!
97, because 94 is when they get the rights. So 97, 99, we have it. So it comes in 97. So if I was born in 1974, that means my sister was born in 87. So in 97, she was 10 years old, and she had the poster on her wall.
So useless trivia knowledge wins again. I won a prize earlier this today for my useless trivia knowledge.
It's time to go to Vegas.
Nope, I was a year off. 96.
But yeah, since she would have been 9. But yeah, she was perfect age. And she thought it was the most amazing thing. Like, she wasn't particularly, she's a pop culture, but she wasn't particularly a superhero fan or a comic book fan. She knew her big brother, but we're 13 years apart. And I should say my half sister, I didn't grow up with her even. She's my dad's other child, and I grew up with my mom. So like, she knew her big brother liked them, and she, you know, and it was something to talk about. But she, not because of me, she just legit loved this movie. And oh my God, could this be a TV show?
It was very 90s.
Yeah, it is the most 90s movie. And so, it has special effects like The Gifted.
It was very 90s, but even then, the special effects look cheap.
Yeah.
So, hold on, quick poll. Rotten Tomato score?
5%?
Mav?
27.
I'm gonna go 13.
Critic score, right?
I'm going to say...
I'm doing Rotten Tomato score.
I'm going to say we're going to be surprised. 53.
What was it?
It was 25%.
Ooh, I was so close. 27.
So you were close.
I was so close. Yeah.
You said 5, right?
To like it.
Yes. Well, you were a big judge. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't see it, but I assume it had to be better than the Justice League. Yes, with David Ogden Steer, fire and ice, and all of that. Yeah,
I've only seen
the Captain America movie.
The Justice League. Have you actually seen? I've only seen stills.
I've seen YouTube clips, but not just stills. I've never seen the entire thing. I've seen all of Captain America.
I saw
the whole thing once. This was like in the 90s because somebody had recorded on VHS.
Some of those were like bootleg, like at Comic-Con.
That's where you
find the Fantastic Four. And now there's the Wonder Woman pilot with, what's her name?
Adrian Colecki. I have taught that.
Yeah.
I have taught that film. I don't feel bad about it. It's like, it's literally a thing. This was never released. I'm not stealing from anybody. It's available in its entirety on YouTube. And I'm just like, I taught a superheroes class, like not just comics, but specifically superheroes class. And I wanted to do a unit where I was talking about feminism in superhero comics. And I'm like, there's not a lot. This was them trying. And some of my kids were like, this is appalling. But others were like, no, there's something here. Like, we get that there's some of them were like, I know it's bad, but wow, this was like, what year was this? There was a lot of that.
Yeah.
they're trying to do a thing here, and they got it. And it's, have you seen it?
I've not seen it.
I don't.
Oh, it's.
I didn't know it was up on YouTube.
Oh yeah, yeah. In its entirety. It's interesting.
I thought it was one of those you had to buy from a CD Comic Con.
It used to be. No, it used to be, but somebody just uploaded it. You can just watch it. Is it
better or worse than the Birds of Prey series?
Okay, yes, that's hard.
I own the Birds of Prey series.
I like the Birds of Prey series a lot. I liked it, but it did not.
There's much it could have done that it did not do. Now, some of it was not its fault. Some of it was the way that it was treated. I mean, you know, it came out right at the same time as Smallville, right? And if you even just look at the credits, Smallville has that slick, the catchy song and the really cool titles. And Birds of Prey has this
song's in my head now because you did that.
You're welcome. And Birds of Prey has like this Alfred voiceover.
Yeah.
And it just, and the production values, the difference between the two of them, it just felt like, tell me you want this show to not succeed without saying it.
They did not want to risk any money. So.
I'm looking at what you're doing in Smallville. You could have made this better.
Yeah.
You could have. You just chose not to.
Birds of Prey has this weird thing. So Birds of Prey, the best part of Birds of Prey is like there's a character on Birds of Prey. The main characters are Barbara Gordon, and she's taken in a slightly younger Helena, let's say Wayne, but like maybe Bertinelli, maybe Wayne, Huntress. And then Dina Drake, who is... essentially, like, she's called Dina Drake, and she's not the Black Canary. She's a psychic girl. And this change is made for no apparent reason. Presumably, they just wanted to, save money.
It's easier to do the special effects of psychic powers.
Right. But clearly there was fan backlash. So, like, five seasons in, you learn that
five episodes.
Five seasons, yeah. Five episodes in.
We wish it was five seasons.
It's only 12 episodes or 14 or something like that.
Yeah, it didn't even make it a whole season.
Yeah. So five episodes in, you learn that this girl is she's an orphan. But her mom was the original Black Canary, who just suddenly shows up, played by Aunt Becky. Lori Loughlin plays her mom, and Lori Loughlin
she was in a DC show?
Uh-huh. One episode where she has the Clannery cry and sing.
All before and then they, time in Harden.
Yes. And they literally just retcon her into being the Dina Drake from the comics because clearly people were like, what are you doing? Why has this decision been made?
Well, now they can just make Black Canary Supermax. Yes. Right? Because now she has the experience. It's method acting.
In time.
She got ripped in prison.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we got very far away from the original, from where we originally started here.
Yes.
Because I'm curious.
Nicole, have you listened to the podcast before?
Yes, actually, I've been on the podcast before. Yes. Was your paper done?
No.
Okay.
This is, I think, the first year where I did not have a complete paper ready.
Okay.
And so, yes, the night before we're furiously trying to get those last pages and to get it polished up. And I am happy with the ideas I have.
Yes.
It definitely needs to be polished. And I know where I'm going with it now.
Yes. Which is, and the fact that the two of you were not done made me feel better about not being done because I am not done. And I don't have the sibling card, but I have the co-chair feel sorry for me card.
We know how it was on your plate heading into the PCM conference.
But, you know, in brighter news, I only have two classes next term. So.
Teaching loads.
They canceled one of my classes to screw me out of my overload.
I will say
that means we have to take my own congratulations on only
congratulations.
It's
a roller coaster.
I will be able to finish that, and I have another one that I need to finish.
Yes, deadlines became much more fluid these past few months as well.
Yes, and then when's your deadline again? All right.
It is.
I think May 1st is the official.
Yes. Some have started coming in. If you are,
I don't know those people, but I hate them.
Wait, the Batman book?
Yeah. Neither is mine. And you know,
I'm gonna. I'm going to start the research this next week.
But like people are like, some people are done. And I'm just like, how have you done this? Thank you. And, you know, you won't be getting comments from me anytime soon, because the reason the deadline is May 1st was because that was after classes. So I could, you know, be done. So I would be forced to be done with grading in order to, before I started reading.
Are you in a Batman book?
Yeah.
Are you just Batman book?
Yes.
Everybody, are you just Batman book?
I'm in his Batman book.
I'm out.
No, wait. Is there still room? Do you need something?
I picked an obscure character.
Oh my God. Just so, okay.
So.
Oh, you submitted? He didn't expect.
Yes. Several friends, because Natalie posted on Facebook. She was like, she's like, oh, I'm in Mouse Batman book. It's probably only because I'm his friend.
Nope.
And I'm like, no, I had to reject several friends. And then Matt responds, I was one of them.
It is probably editing is tough. I think. Picking which essays really the
worst is when you get like essays that it's like both of these sound really good. They are the same paper. They're the same abstract. And I have not worked with either of them, so I don't know anything. And then like you choose one, and I had it happen where then the one that I chose drops out of the project like 4 months later. I'm like, why did I choose the other one?
Yeah. Do you want to know? I have a couple of things where people chose the same topic. That happened a few times. Usually with the entire concept of the book is supposed to be obscure characters. So usually it's when there were ones where I'm like, I'm not taking either of these because it's not like, no, neither of you could do High Harley Quinn. That's literally against the point of the book.
Do you have Joe Potato?
No.
But do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't. I mean, this is too obscure for me.
Late 80s, there's this detective Batman works with. His first name might not be Joe, but his last name is Potato.
I mean, it should be Joe Potato. Just that's what I'll say.
No, but yeah, there was a lot of... I was... like my intention was to have about 12 chapters. You're like, that sounds good. Yeah. So I was like, I'll get 24 essays. I was like, if you're lucky, you'll get 30. That's 6.
Oh wow!
Oh. Yeah. I've never had that many for any of my projects.
And there's like me literally going, I don't know. And it's like in all seriousness, if I had only accepted friends of mine, I still would have had too many. Yeah. So I was literally going through trying to go, okay, the entire point's obscure, but is this too obscure? There were some that were easy because there's like some that I just, no offense to anybody listening, that I just didn't like, or like you picked Harley Quinn, that's obviously wrong for this book. One person literally picked Batman. And I'm like, how do you think Batman is a supporting character?
Batman titles.
No, it was like, and I'm just like, no. So those were easy no's, but then there was just a lot of good. There was a lot of people where there were overlap.
Wait a minute. Yeah. I see a second book. That's what I said.
That was the other thing.
And Mav's like, dear God, please let me just get to the first one first.
But having talked to McFarlane, like, I visual's there, but I kind of want to do a different character. Like, the entire point was to do Batman first, and then I'll do Spider-Man next. And then,
that was the other one. Also, if Matt can't tell over his rejection letter that he got, I wasn't worried about him. It was very much a, you know, I'm sure you can find another place to publish this. Man who has 3 book series.
How many book series do you have going right now?
So. Not counting like other individual book projects. I'm doing the theology, religion, pop culture one. Uh-huh. I'm doing the studies in comics and religion. And I'm working with IVP Academic to do like another one that's like a theology, finding God in different genre things. Right. There's a lot of other stuff.
So I was like, he won't be too upset. And
I can't remember, why did you pick?
I picked Asriel, but
not the main Asriel.
Not Jean Paul Valley.
The second one?
Michael Lane, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like.
Which, good topic for your metaphysics in DC Universe, says he was erased.
Yeah, the issue of identity and
literally because they were the
Batman issue, the Batwoman,
the Batman Inc. Because they had the New 52 start, but Morrison was still finishing Batman Inc. And so like they did a finale issue, and the art had already been done, so they literally just white out three characters.
So
there are these blank, like, no color, no, nothing there, but you can see the outline of characters and figure out who's there.
So I think that was actually in Batwoman's first issue, because okay. She's talking to Batman about joining Batman Inc., and you see them disappear.
So we have a panel today, just for context for a listener who has no idea what we're talking about. The PCA show is always weird, because it's literally like just us talking about things that we're decompressing from stuff we did today. So we had a panel that was that Matt ran. Metaphysics of the DC or DC
and yeah, DC and metaphysics, DC Comics and metaphysics.
Yeah, so that's what we're talking about. And this was largely a advertisement for yet another book that Matt is doing. So I was like, you're gonna be real broken up that don't get to write.
It hits me right here.
I don't understand how you guys have all made fun of it. Like, how does Matt doesn't sleep? How does he do it? Like, I'm always doing an article, go to conferences. I do a dozen podcasts or whatever, which is not true. It's actually a lot.
It's only like three or four podcasts.
No, it's only one regularly now because Gigi
does. Once again, that was the couch for one. And not shit.
But like, you really do publish a lot, like really a lot. I was like, how?
Somehow I
job.
It's like it's like the Michael Scott. Somehow I manage. You just spin all the plates and you keep them running.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't get me wrong. I have one book on Black Panther that is just stupid late at this point, because I signed the contract in 2018, and it's now 2024. I had a co-editor pass away so it got delayed because of COVID. Okay. It got delayed because everyone was late getting stuff in. Uh-huh. It got delayed because, again, I had a co-editor who passed away. I had to find a new so it's just this thing that's been sitting on my shoulder the whole. Yeah. So like, don't get me wrong. Some of this
stuff. Your albatross.
Yeah. It very much is. It's the white whale. It's the albatross.
Like, you run into some of the book people at conferences. So like, when you're behind on something, do you have that moment of, oh no, the publisher's here? Because I've had that. Where I'm like, I need to get them something.
I think it's easy with Lexington and Fortress Academic, Roman Littlefield, that whole table. Because other books still come in that series, I feel like I can kind of, like, if I am delinquent on something. Something I found too is having a co-editor who's much more like, the Batman book had my friend Chuck Robertson, who was very much like, okay, let's get this going. The Watchmen book I'm doing, David Gooden, he's, really about getting
stuff. Someone else keep the schedule.
Yeah. And so like, because I know that I'm prone to like let stuff build and then play catch up, which
Watchmen was when you were listening to me, you asked me about Watchmen, because I've never actually done one of those. And Watchmen was there was a point where my wife, who's been on the show, had to have talking to with me to explain to me that it was okay to say no sometimes.
Yeah.
Which is hard for me. So, like, because that was one where I was like, I have some ideas, but I have to work at it. And Steph was like, how many things are you working on? Why would you? And that is hard, because, like, this job is, we've all said before, it's the dream job. Like, somehow there's a scam going where I get to talk about movies and comics for a living, and someone pays me, not a lot, but they pay me, to do this. And so, like, anytime there's a project, it's like, yeah, I want to be a part of that.
And,
yeah.
Well, and it was Batman, too, because, like, don't get me wrong, there was a part of me that was relieved when he turned mine down, because I was like, oh, thank God.
I did that after me last week. I got turned down for Comic Study Society, their most recent one. And I was just like, oh, thank God. And I'm like, what did I submit? I couldn't remember what my idea was. I honestly don't remember. And I do know now, because I had to go back and look. But I'd forgotten what my pitch was. And I was just like, sorry, we got a lot of great panel selections. We can't do that. And I was like, it's something I don't have to do.
Yeah, which real quick, going back to the metaphysics thing about Azrael, one thing that's interesting about that is, yes, he gets erased, and we see it happen in real time.
Yeah.
He comes back. It's the thing, Matt, right? It's comics, and plus it's like the thing, and it's Morrison writing comics, so it's like, it's that thing that, like, again, if you're looking for me, I still look for that internal, like, okay, come give me an explanation that isn't that stupid. That's all I want. And like, your whole cut, because somehow Palpatine returned.
Yeah.
And
that bothered me. Okay, so you're referring to, in the panel today, the Metaphysics panel, I pointed out that Morrison's
very much been very clear that, like, when stuff happens that doesn't make sense, it's because he doesn't care. And he won't. And he just refuses to. And it's just like a, yeah.
And you know what? If he's the author, that's his prerogative.
He can do so. And so there's people who are like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And it hurts him. And it's like, and he doesn't care about continuity. He'd rather play with the metaphysical, metatextual thing. That's the Grant Morrison way. Everything's weird. Have you not been paying attention for the last 40 years of his career, right? Like, Green Invisibles, none of it makes any sense. Doom Patrol, like, these are Animal Man, where Grant Morrison himself is a character. And
yeah.
What, it's so weird. And so, like, I'm like, okay, if Grant's not going to care, neither am I.
But your point was about how time works, too, yeah. And your initial comments, right? What was it, Feynman, who talks Feynman's about how...
Multiple histories theory states that, much like we can't tell the timeline's branching, it could be collapsing. We don't know, because we can't, like, all we know is that we are in the same space at the same time, but if we all came from different timelines that are slightly different, but close enough for us to converge, it functionally doesn't matter so long as we can get to that path at once.
But I think that's such a cool idea, and that would be a great chapter in a book on metaphysics.
I mean, he's just saying.
It is a chapter in my dissertation, or it's part of a chapter in my dissertation, that, like,
you could adapt.
Yeah.
It's already kind of written.
See, I was nice enough to reject you from a book so you wouldn't do it. I have considered, like, I knew you were doing it, and it was just like, so that part of my dissertation wasn't supposed to be as long as it was. It was like a thing that I wanted to, like, refer to once. And then, like, there was no, like, I went to look it up, and, like, all I could find was Feynman's paper. And I'm like, well, no, but I need this. It didn't need to be comics. I just need someone to be talking about this in science fiction or in literature or somewhere. And it's like, nobody's talking about it. Shit. So, like, literally, now I've got to write, like, 20 pages of dissertation to get to the point where I can just make throwaway comments about stuff so that I can use it as a, like, John did this once. You were literally like, can you do an episode of Vox Pop on, I don't even know what it was, but on this, so that I can refer to it in my dissertation.
It disappears for Sam's working on, so can we just talk about this? I have a paper coming up. Can we just talk about this? talk out my ideas.
Oh my God.
And then I have a citation.
Then I could quote myself.
Nice.
As I said here.
I can't publish, it's weird.
During a panel that you all had on the metaphysics, you were getting at towards the at some point, this idea, like, there's no real Superman. Like, right. We all have an idea in our heads of Superman. So I'm teaching an adaptations class right now, and we had a unit on Frankenstein. And then with that, we talked about, like, okay, well, we have this grotesque, but we have this palimpsestuous relationship with Frankenstein. We're all seeing it now through the James Whale directed Karloff film. And we can't see the original text except for through that. And now there's, you know, hundreds and thousands of more layers. Harry Ketchum's called that. The network is everything that exists, and the complex is everything that we've touched in terms of the nodes, and that creates our vision of Frankenstein.
Tarzan's another good one. Tarzan and Dracula both.
I had a unit on Pride and Prejudice, where it's like, everything's staying a little more core than what Frankenstein does, for example, far afield. And then we did Sherlock Holmes, and now we're doing Superman, and my students are, like, starting to wrestle with the fact, like, what? Like, what is, like, the official core Superman? Like, what is the official canon of Superman? And I'm like,
it doesn't, like, that's why I refuse to call it an urtext. Somebody asked me that. I always say truth copy, because an urtext presumes, even if it's not the original text, like, so Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare copied it from Brooks. Like, Romeo's and Juliet is the thing that Shakespeare is adapting. It's an adaptation. And Romeo's and Juliet is arguably a Troilus and Cressida. But he is definitely adapting Romeo's and Juliet by Brooks. But we can say, when people are talking about Romeo and Juliet, they mean Shakespeare's. They can point to, that does not exist for Superman.
Yeah, Frankenstein and Sherlock Holmes, we can say these are the core canon. Everything else is something building on that.
Superman, not, and it's definitely not Action Comics number one.
The Earth, I mean, in that case, I mean, it seems kind of like the Urtext in that case is like Plato's forms.
Right.
The ideal form is something that doesn't actually exist. Mm-hmm. It's just an idea.
Maybe.
Well, but I would argue with stuff like literature stuff. The reason I said the truth copy is because it's literally only your truth, right? So in a platonic form, we all have the same pretty much idea of what a chair is, and then
or do we?
Well, that, and I'm saying in superheroes, we absolutely don't. Like my Superman is absolutely not your Superman. We're sure of that. But there's enough similarities that we can all agree. There's like a thing on his chest. And,
Christopher Reeve.
What do you want to say? That wasn't
Christopher Reeve. I mean, you know.
I'm not saying which one we all know. Which one was.
We talked about the girls thing became a part of the Batman mythos
because of Frank Miller.
Because of Miller. You've talked about it on the show before.
Yes,
I know you
I
don't
have.
Like it. But
it entered at that point, mm-hmm. and now it's a thing, and everybody does it. Mm-hmm. And everybody does it because he did it. And because that moment mm-hmm. became so huge,
and you're
that
now it
has become. No, I'm not ignoring it. I just hate it.
You're allowed. But I mean, you're allowed to do an
adaptation. But it's a very late addition to the Batman.
Yes.
Origin.
If I write comics or direct one, there will be no falling of the pearls.
So you absolutely want to do the rip the neck off and just have two fall to the
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
This is how pearls actually work.
Yes. But. In every interview that I give promoting that movie, I will say. This is reality.
One slow-mo pearl flying through the earth.
it's gotta hit the ground and go, blink.
And then the ripples blink. In the water.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. You can get the desired effect and still
and
be
then the
accurate.
Ripples become ripples from Bruce Wayne's tears as they
fall. Oh, this is beautiful. Oh, crap. Now I'm gonna have to give you co-directing. Oh,
that's okay. But all of this is actually sort of back to ideas, like, because of these discussions here at the conference. Helping build up what will become my essay. I'm looking at a novel where Star Trek The Generation and X-Men meet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And there's a comic book that is the setup for this. And in that comic book, Nightcrawler is very specifically late Excalibur version with the shorn head and the soul patch.
Mm-hmm.
But when I read the book, that is not the picture I have. I don't imagine Nightcrawler looking like that. I imagine my truth copy of
him. Right. Because Nightcrawler only looks like that for like a dozen issues.
Yeah. And so
literally.
Which I'm appreciating Dave Cockrum.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah. In this case, there is an
where we talk about the dozen issues of the Soul Patch.
I got a photo of Anna's book and Anna's book and Mav together. So
yeah, I have no book.
We're here at this conference.
I wanted to point that out that. That's another layer in the text that I can refer to. Like, this podcast is now part of the layers that I work through on what is my image of Nightcrawler in this Star Trek book.
Do you need us to say anything so you can cite it later? What would you like us to say right now?
This is not my go-to move is, I have a project. Let me find a podcast I can go on and talk about it.
Well, it's like, I got a Chris Claremont to come to my podcast so I could cite him. In an article that I was writing, where I did the whole podcast on one issue of Uncanny X-Men that I was writing an essay on. I'm like, I just need to know what he thinks about this.
Let me promote another one. The comics book I quoted it.
And I could not find him talking about this anywhere. And I reached out and he agreed to come on the podcast to talk about that one issue. And then I quoted him several times. It's
like, as he said, when interviewed by some guy,
you know, he just interviews us. Chris Claremont has said, and then you look at the footnotes, you're like, wait a second.
When I asked him.
Yeah.
Is this an ethics issue?
You're doing the academic version of what every comic book news site says, where Sydney Sweeney says she wants to be in a Marvel movie with Zendaya. And like, if you actually watch the clip, somebody said, so if they offered you a Marvel movie and you got to hang out with Zendaya since you're friends, would you do it? And she said, oh yeah, sure.
This is just
the only condition.
The podcast is just a step up from the printed interview versions that we get that we cite all the time too.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, it is weird though, because we have like we talked about this. We have our weird little network of related podcasts that are not. There's no official. You guys actually are an official network, but that's not. But like, there are. But it's a sort of GGW, us. Lately, for me, like, you've not had the SLO women on, Corey, but, like, you could. Like, I can introduce you to Ayani and Corey.
I haven't had you on yet. We need to...
I think I reached out before the pandemic, and then a pandemic happened.
Yeah, and everything kind of got...
Right.
Yeah. And what about your podcast? What are you doing on?
I didn't come on until
Step
last
one,
fall.
Start podcast.
So.
Yes.
Just add that to the grill.
You were awesome. I was amazed.
Why not?
We talked about it.
When things calm down, we'll do that.
Yeah.
And then we had to remember that things never calm down. So we need to make it happen.
And then we recorded two at once. So,
This does remind me, because it did not come up on your podcast episode of Alien.
Yes.
And I showed this to you later. The toy commercial.
Oh, yeah.
The 1979 toy commercial for Alien. Promoting the xenomorph to children.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Like kids.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We can pull it up right now.
Yes.
And have dead air as we watch it.
That's what editing is for.
But see, I want to edit this. I want to edit the live shows at PCA, and I edit as little as possible. But like you talk about that though, there's a whole history, and this is a paper I might do sometime if I ever want to get into toy stuff, because I need more work to do. But like I am fascinated by the world of grown up movie.
They're turning adults, not kids.
Yeah, not porn. Grown up movies like Alien.
Oh, I'm sure there's porn versions of that too.
No, well, yeah. I'm not talking about the actual Alien.
That's just Rule 3.
Like, there are toys for kids of the Alien xenomorphs.
How?
There's a whole line of Robotech.
I don't know. Robotech. Cartoons.
Yeah, Rambo had a cartoon.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Rambo, well, I think it's Rocky was joined G.I. Joe and had combat.
Oh, that's what
I love you. Nicole watching the video. Yeah,
but it is little kids playing with alien xenomorphs in 1979.
Yeah, I've seen it. You've got like the Rambo toys.
Then in the 80s, they did a whole series of cartoon adaptations of these films for Saturday morning.
Well, because 80s cartoons are just toy ads.
Yeah.
Okay.
The government regulations have been loosened, so they can actually.
My favorite part of that was the child who was holding the alien toy and squeezing its head to make the little second set of jaws climb was also going. That was the best.
The aliens had an even bigger toy line with the whole Colonial Marines versus alien setup. There was nearly a cartoon on it.
But like, how does that? The crow. There's a whole.
I would like to point out that I own the Crow trading card game.
That's for grown-ups or teens.
I think I have most of the special foil cards.
Wow. Oh, the chase cards.
Back before we knew what the chase cards were. Yeah.
So I have the full set of those cards still.
Yeah. And the foil cards, the holograms. I mean,
I've got those. I've got the ones that I still have. I've got the X-Men set. I've got, I think, the first Marvel Universe set.
Marvel Universe one.
I've got
Marvel Masterworks.
I have X-Men, I have Marvel Universe, I have the DC Comics one, which was actually really nice, the first DC set, and I also have the Star Trek set. Star Trek had a very fascinating way when that was all happening in like 92, 93, they released a set of cards, and I think like all the odd-numbered ones were original series and all the even-numbered ones were Next Generation cards, and so like the book is just, and they're like blue and purple. It was just a really nicely designed,
Well, that's like another aspect that you can get into is how the card design changed, because like series one of Marvel Universe was just images with gray border.
Yeah.
White border. And series two was a little better. And series three is like this cosmic background, but if you put them in the sleeves, that background forms an image. And by series four is like everything is a puzzle for your card page. For your card page.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, this is a time when, you mentioned in your talk, this is the time when the collector's market of comics is converging with the collector's market of...
And business practices of those companies are starting to...
The baseball card boom was just before the comics boom. You get this weird stew.
I mean, you didn't mention it, but there was the point when we're just polybagging comics with cards.
Yeah. We mentioned the X-Force, at least.
Yeah.
The 93 annuals.
The one to keep, one to trade.
Which was a thing. Because the X-Force one, I was working at the comic store when I took orders for that, and there were people that I sold 15 copies of X-Force to.
Three of every single card.
Three of every single card. because you need one to open so you can have your cards. You need one to keep Polly back, and then you need one to like to trade.
You need
to
be able to you need one to sell later on to pay for college.
Extinction Agenda also do Polly back with a card.
Yeah.
And that was a character that was destined to take off.
Well, that was part of your topic. It's the there was this moment in like they had to put the cards out, and so what are the characters right now? And you don't know which ones are going to stick around.
Yeah, there's some characters in that set of X-Men cards that
have been around. Is a great looking character.
Yeah, where, and Maverick, like Marvel was sure Maverick was going to be this.
They should have.
This obsessed, a horrible character. They thought he was going to be as popular as Cable. You know, became. They thought Maverick would be like, oh, this is a secret sauce right here.
Not only does he have my last name, his real name is Christopher. I can't remember. It's Christopher That's something. Funny. It's like I don't remember what his last name is, but it's Christopher something. Codename Maverick. Like, and it's like, yeah, this is a character. I to this day don't really understand what his powers were.
No, yeah.
It's like an
energy.
I mean his power is like everybody else of that era was. But he has a gun.
And bionic looking arms.
Yeah.
Did he have a leg pouch?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like shoulder
pads. Yeah, many a pouch. There were shoulder pads. There was
and a mask, but not quite a mask.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't wrap around. It's just.
And some, those,
it just stick to your face.
Some of the guns had cords that went into something.
Yeah.
Not sure what.
Lifo had a lasting. Like, he really did have a lasting. He's very influential in a way that people don't give him credit for, because like he's such a joke amongst them. But like what he's actually bringing, like Lee wasn't doing that. Like Cable, look, that's all Rob.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Lee has his thing, but Lee,
like the cross-hatching art style, that's Lee is bringing that, and Rob Liefeld's leaving that. But the character design, I think Rob Liefeld
decided pouches is like, I mean, that's a joke, but.
He's right. Like, literally, like, his logic, because I've heard him talk about it, where he's like,
I decided that, like, if they were superheroes, it didn't make sense for them to be wearing spandex. They've got to carry stuff. He's like, military outfits have...
Where are they keeping their bullets? Would they have this many guns?
You don't want to know.
But his thought was just tools and stuff. He's like, you're going on adventures, you need to carry stuff. If you were wearing spandex, that doesn't make sense. So they would, like, they'd have to have pockets of some kind. But they're wearing spandex, so I can't do a pocket. So he's like, okay, pouches. Like, that's the everyone should have a utility belt like Batman, and it should be. And I was like, he's right. Like, he's.
And does everybody right. need to carry shark repellent?
I mean,
you laugh
until it turns shark.
Actually, in mid-era. And you have a big enough gun that will repel a shark. Yeah.
Okay, I think shark repellent is on the same level as like. Quicksand, like one of those things that you thought, you know, you see when you're younger and you're like, wow, this is gonna be a really big problem.
I didn't know how to get out of this situation.
There are some things that are, you know, because like everybody's talking about quicksand as like the one, but there's like a lot of things that. Like,
well, for me, when I was a kid in the 80s, it was acid rain. I was convinced acid rain was going to start falling from the sky and melt us.
Was it Captain Planet that did it for you?
I'm sure it was part of the.
God, you guys are just young enough to be Captain
Planet. He's my hero. Yeah. He's going to take pollution down to zero.
Additionally, G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
The real American hero, they had an acid rain one.
Well, G.I. Joe would have been my era, right? Like I was very much watching cartoons.
Oh, they were still going for my era too.
Well, yeah, but their own story. Like somebody, I don't remember what panel it was. Someone, and it wasn't their topic. Someone offhandedly mentioned at some panel that I saw this week. They offhandedly mentioned, you know. And we should go back and watch the original G.I. Joe
energy broadcast transmitter.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't know that,
right? But they were like,
maybe it was when we were talking about what to do for next year for cartoons. Someone was like, you know, we could watch the original G.I. Joe cartoon. And I'm like, energy broadcast transmitter. Yeah, absolutely. The limited series, you had the Weather Dominator one.
And then there's the DNA, right?
The mass device.
Of course. And when it captured the DNA of great world leaders, so they could create
Sergeant Serpentor. That's later.
Plus Sergeant Slaughter.
That's the G.I. Joe movie.
The actual wrestler.
The G.I. Joe movie was when they went to Cobra. That was not. I've been there, but that was.
Serpentor's in it. Yeah,
that was different.
Is that the ones are registering into a snake?
No. Cobra Commander turns into a snake.
No, yeah. Cobra Commander turns
into a snake. Serpentor turns into a snake. Doesn't he, though? in the new series, not the original Sunbow, but the one that came after.
Oh, I didn't.
I have a memory of Cobra Commander being carried.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys, I mean, seriously, nobody else watched Shazam?
Of course I watched Shazam.
Okay,
are you talking about the live action
70s yes!
Shazam?
With Billy, Isis.
With Billy Batson, a grown man who turns into a different grown man?
Yes. Yes.
Well, he's a teenager, I guess.
Played by 25.
Season 1, 25.
Yeah, he's a TV teenager.
This 30-year-old later on.
I'm
18.
That's the power, right? He's supposed to be, I guess, 16, but he's clearly 25, and he says Shazam, and he turns into a guy who's maybe 30. So he's maybe a little buffer. a little
buffer. But 1970s buff. Yeah, right. Not into the 80s He-Man era.
Yeah. It's that's a power. Yeah, yes. Yeah, I remember. It was a road. It was a road show, right? So they travel around in an RV.
Yeah,
that was the thing. Shazam and his
that was out of the syndication run by the time.
I don't know. I know it from the history.
I know we were. Yeah, we're old with you.
Oh God.
We had cartoons.
Yeah. What did you say?
I just said, "Oh my God, I'm the oldest person in the room, aren't I?" Yeah. That's all.
Yeah, a little bit, I'm always weird that one. Especially with students, who just are younger every year, and when they don't know stuff. And I realized this year that this is the year. It's 2024, so unless they're non-traditional students, I've had a couple who are 25 who are old.
Yeah, but in general, they're
unless you're a non-traditional student, every single one of them was born after 9/11, and I'm how is that possible? How are you an adult? That can't be.
Well, I realize, I'm asking my students, one of my classes, to watch The Fugitive, and then I was thinking, that would have been when I was in my undergrad, if someone was asking me to watch a film from the 70s, and I would have been,
Watch John Wayne, The Shootist.
Yes. Does not feel right for The Fugitive.
That's because you get to a certain age, and everything's 5 years ago.
Yeah, yes. 5, 10 years ago.
Yeah,
yeah,
5, 10 years
ago. And this is an upcoming episode of this show, so Vox Pop, we've been talking about, The Crow, where people are getting mad about it,
You already recorded that?
Not yet. Well, probably next week if you want to be on.
I have opinions.
Yeah, because
you want the trading cards out.
Yeah. probably next week's show, maybe 2 weeks. I'm not sure.
Okay.
If you're listening to this episode, behind the scenes stuff, we're not sure when it's going to be out. But people are talking about, this is not that reason. I'm it's 30 years ago. Brandon Lee's been dead longer than he was alive. That's how old The Crow is. Old movie. And
absolutely.
And people are why would, he doesn't look cool anymore. I'm he doesn't look cool because you're an old man. what was cool to a 15-year-old? He does look cool to 15-year-olds in 2024. Look like Bill Skarsgård with tattoos and stuff. They don't look even the Brandon Lee Crow, that's weird goth androgyny. That's not
with some mix of WWF from the era.
That's not a thing in 20. That's not counterculture anymore. He's a weird mime. It wouldn't make sense to start that character now. If you did it from scratch in 2024, it wouldn't look like it looks in the thing. And I'm okay. So we're going to talk about.
I can't immediately disagree.
Yeah, you have a week to think of your disagreement.
Yeah.
I'll marshal them all.
We're going to have an episode on movie adaptations and reboots, is basically. And
okay.
Because the idea being, this is where the show came from. Hey, could we do a topic on that? The idea being, this is how we generate papers, We have an idea, and the idea is, adaptations are weird, right? it's weird to do an adaptation. And if I was going to do exactly the same Crow, I don't need to do it because Brandon Lee did a really good... I do enjoy that movie. He did a very good job at that.
But at the same time, we think that we don't need a new adaptation because of a blank, because this one was good. But there's always somebody who thinks, no, I could do it better.
Uh-huh.
They don't necessarily think, I need to put a different spin on it and make a different mark with it. They just think, I can do it
better.
And they're usually wrong. I think there's also the business point of...
Yes, they're usually wrong.
For like, younger audiences, they don't want to watch the old films. They want to watch it with modern technology, modern, you know, quality.
And modern sensibilities, and that's not fixed me.
And that's like, you get a Parent Trap every X number of years, but, because right, we're telling it, and even though... And like, I definitely felt this when my daughter was like, gonna go see the new Mean Girls, but... I have the DVD. Mean Girls. You can watch it.
Well, I think, I mean...
She did say she likes the original Mean Girls better than the...
I mean, this, of course, is just... It's, I think, dependent on the individual. I mean, I know you made that joke about how they wouldn't go watch Gentlemen in the Shoes. I watched older movies growing up.
Sure.
Yeah, which is... You know, sort of probably had the effect on my love of movies and my knowledge of movies.
It's but I to be the nerd that we are, right?
Yes. Like, yeah. But I'm very aware that my students don't think like that. Yeah. That to them, something made before 2010, I mean.
My daughter once asked me, how old is this? I said, well, or is this old? I said, do you consider it old? And she just looked me dead in the eye and said, it exists before Wi-Fi.
Okay. Wi-Fi is 2000. Massive availability of Wi-Fi is the first iBook. So
it was. I knew it was from the 90s, so I knew it was older.
So, so like 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
So that's 23 years ago. 23 years. So like, so when I'm, your daughter's 15?
Yeah.
Okay. So, so when I'm 15 in 1989, so 23 years before 1989 is 66. Oh my God. Yeah. Like that was like the real
Star Trek original series was old.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which, and you know what? It was. I mean, there were certain things that I actually liked. I mean, I wasn't a huge Trekkie, but like it was, Trek was popular enough that in 89, it was the kitschy throwback old thing. It wasn't cool. It wasn't on because it was cool. It was on because, hey, look at that old thing. It's kind of fun to watch this old sci-fi show.
Also, like, we watched stuff because it was on when we were kids. Like, we didn't have streaming libraries.
We had, we were like, oh my God, it's so cool. Then when we got home box office,
right,
and it was one channel. And so you watch these things because they were on. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's movies that I remember that I'm like, wow, I can't believe I watched that at the age that I was.
Probably more than once.
Yes.
I've seen Bill Cosby himself a million times. I know the entire routine. It was on HBO always.
Over and over.
Always.
Yeah.
Is that the one where he's like about...
We had an audio tape version of it.
I still remember.
Regular rotation. There's a movie called Raggedy Man that Raggedy I watched Man, repeatedly. That I'm like, now I'm like, why were my parents letting me watch that? Do
you remember Starman?
I love Starman. I own Starman.
I don't own Starman. I should get a copy of Starman.
Just read an essay on Starman.
You own the DVD or do you own the copyright?
I mean, it's probably...
If only.
Probably could get it. Because when's the last time anybody mentioned Starman before just now? Right?
I mentioned it not that long ago, but I'm an anomaly.
Is it based on...
The DC?
No, it is not. It's Jeff Bridges and Karen Allen, and he's an alien who lands here, and in order to sort of assimilate, right, he takes the form of her dead husband.
Her recently dead husband.
He
has a recently dead body, so he just finds one, and it's the husband of...
It's not, he doesn't find the body.
No.
She is, like... in mourning, and so she's like watching their old, like their wedding videos and stuff like that, and so it copies that, so then it appears to her as her dead husband, and of course needs her assistance to...
I was going to say, is this did they just recycle this in the HBO Watchmen series where it's like Dr. Manhattan?
That's the logic of it, except for that was a stranger. This is her actual husband.
Yeah.
And then the plot, the love story plot is the same one from Terminator, because that movie did okay. Yeah.
But yeah, there's all kinds of things
about it in the Eternal Future of the 1950s that I just read like two weeks ago.
Starman?
Yeah, I'm gonna say about Starman. Yeah.
Cool.
It's about all these nations of 1950s stuff.
Starman's from like 80s.
But it talks about it was borrowing from ideas from
like 84. It's like basically around Terminator time.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Eternal Future of the 1950s essays on the lasting influence of the decade.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and it there's a... The climactic scenes take place at the big crater. Mm-hmm. I don't remember where it is.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
I want to say it's like somewhere in, it might be in Utah. Is it in Utah?
Mm-hmm. Which big crater are we talking about?
Big Crater National Park.
No, it's not like Crater Lake. You know, it's like, it's...
I don't remember.
You don't remember. Yeah. You guys haven't seen it. Of course you haven't seen it.
Have I? Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Anyway, my point was is that sometimes I'm always shocked. Well, I shouldn't say shocked. That's right. When I mention something and I realize... No, my students haven't seen this because, as we're saying, right, it was only a few years ago. No, actually, Matrix was before they were born. Yeah, they have
and before Wi-Fi.
And before Wi-Fi, yes. But famously, I have a...
famously before Wi-Fi. Matrix is so weirdly dated because it came out, like, right before...
Not because of some technological evolution.
Right, but, like, there was so much technological evolution literally, like, 2 years later.
It's kind of like when you watch Alien, and it's like, this vision of space travel doesn't match anything that's going to happen, you know, because it's this weird, very hard, you know, 1970s tech. And Matrix being late 90s is, like, what the internet is just 5 years later is so different.
It's very dial-up-y. Yeah.
Well, it makes, like, Matrix 2 and Matrix 3 seem weirdly dated because they can't jump the technology. They're locked into the 90s world, so like there's no Wi-Fi in the other ones either, and there really should be.
I haven't watched all the future Alien films. Do they update the tech, or does it all look like 1970s ideas of the future?
No, they do update some of it. I mean, Alien Resurrection, I'm one of the anomalies who actually liked Alien Resurrection.
Which one's Resurrection?
Resurrection is
the last one, right?
Yes. That was the one where she basically, you know, with the team, Michael Wincott and Winona Ryder where she has sex with in the alien pit. And, that whole thing. Yeah. It is. It's like this total thing that you're like, oh yeah, she's totally, it's like a big alien orgy pit. So it is updated a little bit then, but of course, like we're saying, they can't make it too different. Yeah. But see, what they did was they did a time jump.
Yeah.
Right? Because
hundreds of years
later. I don't remember how many years.
But she's a clone, and she would have easily been... I mean, she's far enough of a life that her original self would have been long dead, and everybody should know. Right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit like... You look at Star Wars, like, this guy's far away, but they're just one step removed from DOS interfaces. they're using on everything, and now all the new Star Wars is going to look a little more like DOS than modern technology.
It does make it hard to watch Independence Day when it's like, I will interface with this alien computer and give it a virus. A computer virus.
With System 7? System 7 from...
If I just put this cord into that one, it's all... They're going to talk to each other.
Yeah.
It's fine. We know this. This is how computers work.
I want to hear about your sex panel.
It was great.
Okay. Perhaps you need to give that a little context.
So I am the area chair for... It's currently called Eros and Pornography, but I intend to rename
Eros, Pornography, and Popular Culture.
Which I intend to rename before next year.
And
there was a lot of support for that.
It
is never greatly attended because it's just one of the smaller areas. We had a packed room, which also, it was the last panel session of the day. So on a Friday night, usually no one's around. Mm-hmm. We were there with a packed room. There were people standing up still, 25 people.
Single, ready to mingle.
Yeah. Well, no, just like very into that. And there was we had a talk on reverse harems and bisexual awakenings in gay novel.
Reverse harems.
Yes.
Yes.
Say more.
Yes.
A reverse harem would be a woman with a group of men.
Got it.
But also, that's where she started.
It was not immediately apparent to be either.
Yes. Right, thank you.
I don't even feel like you were...
But also,
I have a friend who likes to read those. That's why I know what it is.
And we...
Don't get defensive.
That was one.
Polygyny.
That was one we had. And then the second one was... And I might have been doing the or the one was on BDSM and rope culture, specifically Chibara. And then the third one was on...
Chibara Kenbaku.
I don't remember now.
Okay.
I have notes.
You get forward looking?
You are really well versed here.
I'm widely read.
Shibara, I think. Now I'm like double checking. But it doesn't matter. But so, and then the third one, I don't know what she called it, but her close reading was the book 50 Shades of Grey. It was interesting, but literally it was about the ways in which people view erotic fiction. It wasn't about 50 Shades of Grey. It's about understandings of erotic fiction and their accuracy and lack thereof. And
was it about contract negotiation and legalese?
No, that was more the previous one on ropes and stuff. This was
it was a
fascinating panel, right? And then this one was more about people's intentions of censoring things, often in the names of children. And it's like, children aren't reading 50 Shades of Grey. What are you doing? It was about scapegoating things about like, oh well, the big of the children, it's scapegoating, and a lot of scapegoating things as well. It's for pedophiles, not 50 Shades of Grey, but just in general, mm-hmm. policing of internet spaces in particular in the name of decency, when really no, you could just not read this. This is a for a very specific reason.
Speaking as someone who read Flowers in the Attic,
yeah, that's the one
at a very very young age.
I read much. Yes.
I mean,
but like the point being. That's like,
have
that's
you
like,
read
that's,
it?
That's, no, that's, but I know what it is.
Specifically for you and your parents. But like...
Specifically for this discussion, I've heard a podcast. It's history of being read by people far too young to be reading that.
Yes.
And people not knowing what was in the book.
Well,
no, we knew what was in the book. No, we heard the adults did not. Yeah, and that's why. Yeah.
And
the final paper was about Friends. The TV show Friends. And like the sex positivity in the TV show Friends. And like,
interesting.
And she, and
I wonder if I see, I'm trying to figure out, because the draw was so big this time, I am kind of wondering, like, what was the paper that was the draw? And I'm wondering if it was Friends.
Nope, pretty equal mix. It was because I could, because there were certainly people there who were like, for each of the four women on the panel, mm-hmm. for each one, there were certainly a sort of oh, these five people are here to see you. These five people.
You have to tell them the questions that come after.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That and like also, it was a lot of this question's for you. This question's for you. This question's for John. This question's for you. You know, like they, like they're like, if you know, like they were they, like, or be like, I have a question for Matt and you, the woman on the end. Like it's like, okay, you clearly know Matt. And it was that kind of thing. So I was like,
interesting.
It was, but it was great. But and the last one was on. So originally, I was supposed to have two panels. And the Friends one was supposed to be on the other, what was supposed to be, but like, we had people drop out, so it got collapsed, and this is how it ended up. So they worked well together. There were people found joint questions. It was a blast. And, you know,
now, out of curiosity about the Friends paper, the sex positivity,
uh-huh.
I assume that you have seen all of Friends.
Mm-hmm.
How'd the read work for you? I mean, does it work in a convincing argument?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Very much. She talked about some of the problems with it as well. Like, they're very obvious. Like, there's stuff that doesn't. They were all younger than we are, so this is people. At least the people on the panel, not necessarily right in the audience, but the people on the panel. Most of them would have been watching it in reruns.
Netflix.
And so there. So as
their children, experience of it is different.
Children born in the 90s and in the 2000s who are adults today.
Yeah.
And they're like, one of the things that they all, and this is a thing I know from just like listening to my students as well, the ways in which Chandler's transgender father is treated don't hold up. There are a lot of jokes to the effect of, like, they never use female pronouns. Kathleen Turner plays his father, who has, they don't use the word transition, and it doesn't hold up, and people find it problematic, but I'm like, it doesn't hold up because it's really referring to where discourse in popular culture was around transgender people. It was probably really progressive
also,
for 1990.
I mean, not to split hairs, but I'm gonna, because we're academics. The question is, because I've heard people talk about this too, the question is, was his father actually meant to be transgender or a transvestite?
Yes.
Because those are different things.
And the show doesn't know how to distinguish that.
Because that wasn't really in the lexicon at the time.
Certainly not for...
Not to the extent.
Not on the level of where people who are watching Friends are away. And to talk about the creators, to listen to the creators talk about it today,
because they did an interview very recently, and they said, we wish we'd used female pronouns.
It was intended to be transgender.
They didn't know the difference, but in their mind of how that character lived, that character was living as a woman full time, that's why they hired a woman to play the character rather than having a man do it in drag.
Okay. Because they talk about it as his drag show.
Right.
And a drag show does not imply.
And that was addressed in the talk. So there's a lot
All right, that's
it,
cool.
It's different. And this is, but also at the same point she was talking about, there's a lot of, almost every combination of kissing happening on the show, including guy on guy, in various ways, there was, and even if kissing doesn't happen, there's a lot of, like, the very obvious, and there's an episode where Ross
and Joey are nap partners.
And it's very sexual. They're clearly not having sex, but it's literally, they learn that neither of them have ever slept better than they do when they're in each other's arms. And so they're having this hiding.
It's a little nap. Yeah.
They're having an affair with each other where they just nap and shit. So there's that. And she talked about like the ways in which the cast was sexualized in print media, just supporting the show. She showed lots of magazine covers.
Yep.
She said things that didn't make sense. There'd be couples, there'd be pictures that were, hey, this entire cast is sexy. And there's David Schwimmer and Courtney Cox holding each other, but they're brother and sister on the show. But when they're on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine, they're just two sexy people, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's like, weird.
It was an interesting talk. I'm curious because I remember the episode in which Courtney Cox was, when Monica had became convinced that Chandler
talked about that.
Okay, yes. Good. That he got turned on
by sharks
because he was watching porn. But when she came in, he changed the channel real quick. But she figured out what he had been doing, and so she thought he likes sharks.
And I love my husband, so I'm going to get real into sharks.
So she gets like the sexy little negligee and puts on a, you know, shark week kind of thing and is like, is this working for you? Do you want me to thrash around? And he's like, what?
Yes. And at the end, he's like, no, I was just watching porn. And she's like, oh. Okay, good.
That was talked about. It was an amazing four tops where she went into details about that. She talked about about the presumed bisexuality of Phoebe based on the very few scenes where they don't talk in depth about it, but there's enough evidence that she presumes that.
Did they talk about male homophobia? Because I feel like that part comes out a little bit.
A little bit.
And then, I mean, because there's an episode where they show an alternative future. I think it's like if Rachel had never joined the group or something. And so Ross is talking. So like Ross stays in his previous marriage, in his first marriage. And then he's talking to Joey about like, we had a threesome, but
a threesome with a girl from the gym.
But they kept
just sort of slapping me away.
Yeah.
So I went and made a sandwich.
Yeah.
And Joey's like, well, you don't want that. Right.
Then they're like, how was the sandwich? It's good.
But I feel like anytime there was a hint that it's almost like the Seinfeld joke. It's like that same spirit of not that there's anything wrong with that slight little, '90s twinge, but progressive for the time.
But and there was an understanding of that, and it was a question and answer session afterwards, and I'm hoping that they all come back and like maybe I get two panels next year.
So it sounds like this panel was a little bit more tame than last, because last year you had one girl who did a thing about kink lifestyle and like being a big and a little.
And she was back. She did the reverse harem paper this year.
Okay. Okay. So maybe there was the sort of like hot and steamy Cinemax After Dark type of thing happening for some of this. I mean, you did your thing on like the pornoverse.
Yeah. The pornoverse of Penthouse Comics. Yes.
And then there was the like demon.
Ayani's.
Yeah. Ayani's paper. Like holy penis. Yeah. Like there was just so much like.
There was some visual. So again, for nobody can see this, we're talking podcast. PCA is a presentation, so
yeah.
People have PowerPoints, and so there were
disclaimers.
And there was some nudity in the PowerPoints. It's the porn panel, so like you know what you're getting into, but it wasn't. Ayani and I went far beyond. and again, I know she's listening. We thought she was so nice. She texted me and said she couldn't come, but the. You know, we embraced it last year. And I said, by the way, understand at the beginning of my talk last time that there's going to be quite, well, it's Penthouse Comics.
It depends on the topic. I mean, we had Luke would, when he would present in comics, he presented in comics for a while. He often did racier things. And I saw one year he was presenting in advertising, was talking about French advertisements, and they are, you know, as opposed to American advertisements, which use sex to sell things, but it's sexy people in skimpy bikinis. The French are just like, make them naked. You know, why not? Just have her naked crouching with the bottle of perfume. That'll be good.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, so sometimes, you're like, wow, okay, that was so,
That didn't come up in your presentation on X-Men poetry.
Strange, yes, it did not. Although there was one that I think would qualify as sort of a, and that has almost sort of like a bisexual flavor to it. I don't remember which one it is now. I have to look, but it's based on a comic that's about a female character who's like interested in another female character. Mm-hmm. And so
I just love, there's almost an absurdity sometimes to like the academic analysis of these things. Cause like, again, I'm thinking about Ayana's picture. There's like the panel of like the demon that's able to transition back and forth from male and female, like anally penetrating the guy, and like the pictures, like it's like, and like it's just this graphic, and I just love the academic. So in porn, this is referred to as the alveolus shot, and oftentimes this refers to, you see how the person's face was like, see, that's a sign of shock and dominance, perhaps. It's just like I do see that. The colors really pop in this Monet, like.
We are at work here.
Exactly.
The fact that this is a job is weird. But
it is. Yes. It is.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Panel.
You were literally. This one. Yeah, not the one. Because like our actual panels were at the same time. You were doing your panel literally at the same time that we were doing the Batman panel.
X-Men
panel.
Yeah.
No, he meant. He's sorry. He missed
the porn one. Yeah, the porn one was like. So I think
do you want to change the name to?
Erotica, rather than everyone hates Eros. They're like, we don't know what it means. Is it God? So they want erotica in the title.
Like erotica in popular culture?
I think I'm going to make it erotica pornography and maybe sexuality or something. It's something that they can explicit what it is, because they don't. So one of the things, a lot of it's not. So because I've had people write me. Can I present on like kink things, like girl thing? Yes. But like, it feels like, I think people think that they have to like do 50 Shades of Grey because it's a movie that like, and I was like, no, totally it's inbounds to talk about. But then they're also like, well, can I do queer stuff? And it's like what? Like just the idea of being gay? No, I want to do a thing about gay sex. Absolutely. Come on in. Yeah. So
all I will say with changing the name is keep in mind.
Not stomping on.
We have several areas that have like really long names.
Yes.
And then sometimes they get cut off because, you know, in the programs or in the system, there's only so many character spaces.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind before you create.
You know, I don't know.
You want it to just be labeled erotica pornography.
Or
you want some academic addendum on the end.
Erotica and sexuality.
Erotica and sexuality. I don't know that porn needs to be in there. Is erotica and pornography? That seems redundant.
That's like saying graphic novels and comic books.
Yeah.
Which they wanted me to change the title to.
They have their presentation to their travel office when they're trying to get reimbursement. What do you mean you're just
right. So like, yeah, what was this convention again?
We're not the romance now. 50 Shades of Grey, or literally like any romance thing that calls itself a romance novel, but you're really talking about the sex in it. Come on in. And I want that to be clear. So
yeah.
So there were a lot of
questions. Well, romance novels cover everything from you know clean romance to
right,
the cozy romance.
This is the
cozy romance.
This is one of the issues that comes up is when someone's submitting to this. What area do you submit to? Superhero papers end up in a lot of different areas.
Right.
Yes.
Not just comics and comics.
And believe me, I thought about rerouting some because I was like.
That's more ours.
Yeah, that belongs here.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
How did we end up being called Comic and Comics Art, or Comics and Comic Art?
Terry did that because it used to be Comic Art and Comics.
Right. It's just why do we need both? Yes, for our editing.
Well, I mean, it would be better to do comics and superheroes or something. But that's at least more descriptive. Well, comics and comics art doesn't make sense.
Well, at that point, we're splitting off into superheroes and popular culture and comics and popular culture.
Right.
I suppose we could say comics and popular culture.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I think my guess is that saying
let's make it longer.
No, I think saying comic art was the idea that would cover strips and editorial cartoons and things like that.
See, I would argue right. Comics. Well, I mean,
but at one point they wanted me to change the name to comics and graphic novels, and I said that's like saying comics and comics.
Yeah.
Because
that's like DC Comics.
That's it. Well, because I'm like, look.
No.
I'm not going to call it books. I'm not going to call it books and paperbacks.
Right.
Because, not every book is a paperback, but every paperback,
Right.
Books
and novels.
I'm not. And the funny thing was they asked me about this, right after. I had 80 presentations.
Yeah.
I think we're fine.
Yeah,
because that's what they said. Well, it might draw in more people. And I'm like,
we can't fit
anymore.
We're
one of the top areas.
Yeah. We have a panel basically every hour of the conference.
We're good. I mean, we're not as big as sci-fi or game studies.
Yeah.
But I'm like, we're good. Thanks. So I don't know.
We're only not that big because so many superheroes go over to sci-fi when they should be enough in our area.
Or film or television et cetera. Or gender studies
that's the nature
et cetera.
Well, I went to a fan studies one that had a very good paper on Spider-Verse stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much approaching it from a fan studies point of view.
Yes. The sexuality of pop culture studies is, these presentations could be in three different areas.
So we have to make crossover panels between philosophy and comic books, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, last year...
So many crossover panels I can handle.
Until we have the crisis of crossover panels.
There it is. Did you hate the Arrowverse crossovers?
No. I meant there's only so many crossover panels I can handle. I'm the one who made the program.
Oh, I tried to find it. This is what both areas.
Okay.
Made it by hand.
Yeah.
She has a notebook with every
name. Because the system is not up to speed yet.
Yes, I had to keep track of
everyone
that came in, when it got assigned to the area chair, when they approved it, when I went and approved it.
Her handwriting is very good.
You deserve this room. In fact, you should have that next room over too.
Yeah. I should resolve nothing. Now we're like way outside of the
Yes. But well, it was nice to have the crossover panel with philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but Matt, before you say we resolve nothing, I want to wrap back around to our earlier discussion on the X-Men panel.
Yes.
And particularly the first panel where we had someone present on the X-Men anime, which I was desperate to have in the book.
Yeah.
I was going to do it if no one else was. I'm so glad someone else did because they did a much better job than I would have. But how many of you know that when the X-Men anime series from the 90s aired in Japan, they had an original anime opening?
like the X-Men cartoon series, like the Fox cartoon series.
Oh yeah,
they had an anime opening.
And it had
actually two different ones.
It had the Brood.
Yeah,
oh, wow. Some Cable features prominently. Uh-huh. As though he was a major character. But do you want to take a look at that before we close?
This is great podcasting to watch the video.
Watch
it. Oh, man, watch that. Well,
I just want to see it. To provide commentary.
See, there's also a song.
Okay.
Oh, there's a song?
Oh, yes.
Does it start off with like a scream or something?
We do not have the classic X-Men theme.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I love it already. Oh, I'm so disappointed if I saw this opening and this is great.
Well, and the thing about that animation, like, Saban was a cheapskate, right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
And so that's part of why, like, the showrunners were always annoyed with him.
I mean, the animation is, like, people love that show, but this is not that show.
No. This does feel like so many anime tropes that I'm not a huge anime fan, but I know enough of the tropes and I'm seeing them all on display.
Right, but this is great, a clipping. This is like just.
What's
like,
up with this song?
Oh, this is how anime started in the 90s.
Yeah.
So they had songs like
this. Red? I guess he does show up. Does he show up in that?
Yeah. Like season 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was very prominent in that opening title sequence.
He's like the hardcore J-pop. This is great.
Wow, and it just keeps going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah,
well, again, this is how anime were in the
movie. Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of them. I mean, again.
Well, you remember the Below the Kitchen song?
Yeah, that was a great. Even a year old when I'm watching lots of money, I still like, yeah,
definitely. They found lots of ways to move the entire core cast across the screen.
Like, you know, the smoke over the cry to the moon.
I'm still gone.
Oh, no. That was only the first one.
Oh,
okay. you can watch the second one on your own time.
Yeah,
wow.
So anyway, we resolved nothing.
No, as usual.
Yeah. So what I
but we weren't attempting to resolve. No. We were attempting to just chill and
right.
And
this chat. This is the after party show. So I have to say
after party show.
That's the very first episode of Vox Pop is literally me flying home to because I had three conferences in 8 days. It was amazing. I'll never do that again as long as I live.
Yeah.
But I did Northeast MLA, Southern Sociological Society, and PCA in an 8-day period. I did PCA, flew home, was there for one day, wherein we recorded the first episode of the show. John was our guest remotely. I'd seen him the day before.
I remember you said, like, I'm going to do this. And like, I was kind of thinking, like, well, it's the first episode. You know, like, you should just be there with your, at that point, Wayne was just going to be your co, you know, you two were.
No, it was going to be Wayne and Katya, but Katya couldn't make it.
Yeah, and so it was like, well, you should just set up yourselves. And then the last day, I said, look, if you need a guest, I will do it.
And it's literally, so like I flew home, recorded that, left the next day, and went to New Orleans for SSS. And edited it there. But like, a lot of that show is us talking about the concept of what the show is, but also just part of it was the decompression of having just been at PCA, which Wayne didn't go to that year. So then the next year, it's like us, we did a show at PCA, and that became like our thing. It's just like, well, you know, since the show was very much about, well, this is what we do after conferences, like, that's how this happened. So. So these are people I hang out with. You're listening to the show. These are people I hang out with. At these. this is what we do. Plus a couple other people who are, you know, not around. But occasionally we do have conversations we don't record for public consumption.
Yes.
But not as often as you would think. So what I'm wondering is, you know, for the listeners, and I don't know, because like last year's show, it was me, Matt, and Ayani.
I think that was the first one I wasn't able to be part of.
Right. But that show, we also edited it in Ayani and Mike, because I hadn't recorded yours. I walked in the middle of your presentation last year. So Ayani and my papers, I edited those into the end of the episode. But this episode is like already an hour and a half. So maybe next week is just our presentations. Or maybe it's the show. So I don't know. If you're a listener,
let us know in this episode. Do you want to hear
votes?
Because I can't just give them to you. I did record them.
I've got. You're really hankering for 18 minutes on X-Men trading cards. It's there.
Or you did trading cards. I did The Gifted, the TV show The Gifted. John did.
Star Trek, X-Men novel.
And Nicole asked me not to record hers.
I have that.
Yeah.
Nicole went first because Nicole was the least prepared because Nicole is also VP.
Yes.
So
I was running the entire conference.
Yeah. Thank you. Because you keep trying to get me to like you want to be vice president? No. You did it at the you were like asking for volunteers at the area chairs meeting where you were clearly losing your mind.
Clearly?
Yes.
Oh, great.
You're like, this is a great job. It's really hard. Please, who wants to do it after me? I can't do it anymore. It's awful.
Okay, I did not say it was awful.
No, you did not. But it was very, you didn't make it sound, would you agree? She didn't make it sound appealing.
I've also heard all the backstories from you.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll make it sound better next year. I'll pitch it better next year.
But I was sitting there with John, and John went, we're all watching. No one's going to take this.
Yeah, and even if you make it nice, now it's recorded. We know it's bullshit.
No, this is the thing. Nicole will have everything fixed by next selection. So that,
exactly. I can't remember who it was who said something to me about it. And I said, and that's what I said, problems, hopefully the problems will all be solved in a couple of years. So,
by next election, it's going to be smooth sailing for whoever's VP.
But,
yeah.
So yeah, but no, it's been great. And even when you had to run out of the methods afterwards, people were like, she does a great job. It's like, yeah, she had to run and go handle something. You don't know. Yeah. It's just like, you're clearly hurt.
Yeah, I'm so sorry I had to leave. No,
it was fine.
No, did you get my email? Because I have a book for you.
Yes,
I saw.
Yeah, yeah, I saw.
I need your address and your address.
I see how it is. I see.
you could have said Triumph.
Here's the crazy thing. So you had asked a question about Zero Hour. I have not read Zero Hour. I knew that from Grant Morrison JLA.
That's actually pretty incredible that you were able to pull Triumph out.
I was like, was it this character?
Question mark?
No, it was like, I answered the question.
Some of his amazing books. And he has to do a room full of people who know a lot of absurd geek trivia. And no one pulled it out except for John.
Yeah. So I had a list.
Where did you get that question?
I will say, I'm not going to say that no one else had it. I was just the first to say it out loud.
That's fair.
Yes.
That's fair. That's very humble of you. But you probably are the only one.
You were
disqualified.
Well, no. That was the other. That was the Spider-Man conference.
That's the second time I've blocked you.
Well, no. So there was a question and nobody answered it. I'm like, I know, and I'll answer. And then somebody else answered it. Somebody else had it too, but they didn't answer it. I'm like, okay, give him the book.
He's like, I know you.
I'll just get a book.
Sometimes, those random things happen. I remember for a trivia night with the school, and we were competing against other people, and the last question came up, and I'm like, I so totally know this, and I just wrote the incident. And I'm like, they're all like, are you sure? Are you sure? I'm like, yes, I've got this. And I turned it in. And we won we were like 500 points ahead of the closest other team at that point. It was a picture, and it was, who is this person? It was Ming-Na Wen.
Okay.
And I'm like, yes, I know this. Yeah. And they're like, are you sure? Yeah.
Please.
Yes.
To answer your question, how I knew, I've been reading through anything having to do with like a canon crisis, whatever event. Mm-hmm. And so I actually have some notes on my iPad that all go up until Countdown to Final Crisis, which is where I'm at now. And I was just looking through for an obscure fact.
How obscure?
I was like, Justice League Tax Force number 16, Triumph gets spit out of
the window. There was no way I was going to pull like a
I was like, I've got it.
That was impressive.
I was like, these books are expensive. You're gonna want to know.
So anyway.
Well, we really were just trying not to be. I was like, I know my obscure characters. Next time.
Well, I like Zero.
But no, like your next book, I have my obscure characters down.
Well, we were talking about trying to revive Korvac. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was been suggested was to highlight some obscure, ridiculous characters.
Joe Potato.
So, you know, and although someone did, Wendy did request that if I make a new Corby, it be smaller.
The traveling Corby.
Yes.
It was a Ken doll, wasn't it?
Wait, it was half of a Ken doll stuck into a box and spray painted gold.
After you, Miss Joe. No one. Hey, we need the Corvac.
PC.
Anybody want to flex stuff?
That's serious comics area lore. Yes.
Anyone want to play anything?
The Protagonist Podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Buy books.
Yeah. Pop culture and theology. Theology, religion, pop culture.
Yeah. Superheroes.
I got some books. Buy them or have your college library buy them.
Yep. If you enjoy
submit to PCA.
Oh, yeah, please. Yeah.
Become VP.
Yeah. Submit to PCA. Maybe next year you could be part of this.
Or you could be the vice president. You know, if you enjoy the show, we certainly hope you do. Please subscribe to us on iTunes or Spotify or Pandora or wherever the hell you get podcasts from. Do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. Especially on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, that goes to the algorithm, makes us more popular, and really helps us out. I'm not reading this from the script. I'm literally doing this off the top of my head. Everybody can verify in the room right now. So if I forget
something. I see your phone out. You're leaving your phone.
I would like to read a statement.
I would like to thank Maximilian of Thought Porn Music for our epic theme song, building ever so more epically and playing us out. I once again like to thank all my guests for joining me. I thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
He was off script. That was off the dome.